I'm speaking today with Andy Neal, who is one of the candidates for the open city council race. Andy, I'm going to start off by asking you a question I'm going to ask everybody, which is, why are you running for this race? Why are you running for this seat?
Great question. And again, it's great to be with you, Charles. I really appreciate the forum and the opportunity to basically get my views out there to the public in your forum. So I seriously actually decided to do this to, I got tired of listening to myself complain, and that's pretty much the long and short of it. I'm at a point in my life where I'm able to kind of get up off my duff and go and do something about trying to make a change and make a difference. And over the last couple of years, I've really made a cognizant effort to be more involved in the community. I live and work downtown and work from home, actually. And so it's allowed me to go out and interact and be involved in some more organizations and associations and groups. And from doing that, it just, the city gets smaller and smaller the more people you meet. It's, the degrees of separation in this town aren't very big. So I noticed that I could have an effect change in the city. I was really able to help increase membership and activity in some of the young professional groups around town. And that just kind of gave me the incentive to go out and say, look, you can go out and do this, make a change. And I've always kind of wanted to do politics, and this is kind of what seemed to be the right time, again, just in my own personal life to do it. So the special election came up, and I decided to throw my hat in the ring and leverage the fact that I am an unknown, and that you can get in a race like this where there's usually be a lower turnout, have your motivated base, and take your best shot at it versus someone going out unknown, grinding away, raising all kinds of money, and that's definitely not where I'm at right now.
Okay, so what do you think you would bring to the council seat that none of the other candidates would?
I would think my energy, passion, and basically determination. I'm somebody who's definitely very passionate about what I believe in, and I'm somebody who also, you know, doesn't mind putting in full day work, going out and meet people, different areas across town. I had a lot of good feelings and a lot of some successful town hall meetings I attended recently with the capital improvement programs, and the fact that I think that you had a candidate who was actually going out and doing that. You didn't see a lot of other folks out there circulated around, and I think that resonated with some people, and that just, again, really encouraged me. So passion, energy, sincerity, and then, again, determination that if I've got a project, it's something I'm going to sink my teeth into, I'm going to take accountability and see it till it's done.
Okay. What do you do for a living?
I do human resources and recruiting consulting. So my day is typically, again, I work from home, so my day is looking at resumes primarily, pre-qualifying candidates, everything from IT consultants. Throughout my career, I've hired everything from truck drivers to CEOs. So.
How do you believe that will experience will bear on your ability to serve as a council member? What does that help you do?
You bet. No, I think I can add value from the standpoint that I've just interacted with so many people over the course of my professional career, and I've had the opportunity to work with some really top tier companies like IBM, like Accenture, like Pricewaterhouse, and what that does is it just, again, it's high visibility. You're used to justifying your existence all the time. So developing metrics reporting, analyzing budgets, cost per hire ratios, doing analysis, doing presentations, and again, just in a very high profile environment where you could get that call on Friday where you're basically out the door on Monday. So I think high pressure environment, again, being able to justify your existence and dealing with various people at various levels is what I can bring to the table from that perspective.
Okay. You know, generally speaking, city council has acted in consensus with Mayor White, you know, different than it was under the previous mayor. Do you foresee yourself being a part of that consensus or coming at things differently?
That's a great question. I definitely see myself taking some different views than the mayor in certain areas. I do credit him for a lot of his creativity. There are several programs I'm sure that some questions we'll ask down the road that, you know, I'm not for big, I typically have not been a big government fan. And when I see some of the programs that are out there, I definitely, it kind of goes against my instinct. But the one thing I do admire in the mayor that he has performed, you know, above admiration has basically been his ability to finance programs he wants without trying to raise taxes to a point where it's definitely painful. But I am typically a low tax type of individual. That's been kind of my selling point as well, as I go out and talk to folks. And but there's certain areas I'm definitely passionate about where I can see we would butt heads. But I do admire him for his creativity. That's for sure.
Now, of course, Houston City Charter gives Mayor White an awful lot of power in terms of setting City Council's agenda. City Council in Houston is relatively weak compared to a number of other big city councils. You know, how do you see? You know, what is your plan? You know, to bring the issues and where you might, especially where you might have differences with the mayor, to the forefront and get them to be a part of, you know, the agenda and the conversation.
You bet. And I'd be looking to utilize that at-large seat as, you know, basically utilize the bully pulpit that seat offers to go out and rally community support and use every venue I could, whether it's, you know, the press corps, whether it's the blogosphere, whether it's actually going out attending super neighborhood meetings. There's something I feel that strongly about. I think the mayor definitely has the best of all intentions. I mean, I think everyone who's sat back and watched him over the last several years knows, I think they probably believe, whether they agree all of his policies or not, that he has a good heart, and he's looking to try to do the best fit for the city as a whole. So I think I would just utilize the bully pulpit, try to, again, rally grassroots support, utilize every medium, if you would, and then basically try to bring those people to bear to tell them to get active and you know, call the mayor's office, write, solicit information from other council people, and see where it goes from there.
Now, what would you say are your top issues, and what do you hope to do about them?
You bet. Again, a lot of it has to do with advocacy. I mean, I'm definitely aware of the fact that you have the strong mayoral system here, and, you know, you can only be one voice out of 14, essentially. So. And in addition to the mayor's. But, you know, I think crime's in the first thing in everybody's mind. Although the city council per se doesn't really have a chance to affect crime, I would utilize, again, kind of bully pulpit and the position, the stature of this position, to try to highlight, I think, deficiencies in that area. Second would be homelessness, having to live downtown and work downtown as well. And that's an issue that's big and it's going to become a lot bigger, given some of the changing landscapes of, basically ties to my third point, education. I mean, we have an educational system that I'd like to advocate some changes there. We have 40% dropout rates. You add that to the fact that we have increased homelessness, we have a high crime rate. I mean, those all kind of feed off each other and help perpetuate the other. So in those specific areas, I do have a homelessness plan I can get into with you or highlight for you later on. But crime, homelessness, and education, and even those areas that may not be directly affected by the city council, I really believe that this position, you could be an advocate and, again, shine a light on certain deficiencies and put some creative ideas forward and then let the powers that be working behind the scenes. So, and I could do that better as a city councilman versus just a lay person or just your actual everyday voter out there.
You mentioned that you live and work downtown. What's your opinion of the state of downtown today? There's been a number of stories lately, both about you know, new construction of you know, like the Houston Pavilions. There's new park space being built. There's also some, you know, some of the vendors downtown have complained about issues relating partly to rail, partly to construction, partly to fact there's a lot of bars. What's your opinion of all this?
You know, it's been interesting to see over the last several years. I mean, downtown is definitely in transition. When I first moved downtown, they still had a lot of the momentum coming over from the Super Bowl. I think that was fantastic, and it was neat to see the transformation downtown went through. And so when I moved back to Houston, out of being out of state for a couple of years, I decided to move downtown because it just blew my mind how much it had changed, and for the better, of course. So, but now, right now, it is interesting. You've got the new Discovery Green going in, so we have some new green space. We have the new Houston Pavilions going in across the street. But I think downtown is definitely trying to reinvent himself into more of a neighborhood type of aspect, which I think is fine, but I think people still need to realize it's still an urban environment. And until we get some soft retail downtown, we're going to still just be a destination for bars and restaurants.
Well, what, if anything, can be done to bring more retail downtown?
Well, honestly, I think that goes back to the homeless issue again. I think there's issues regarding parking, the linking of the rail systems that are supposed to be going through, again, with the different areas that have not been brought online, whether it's the University Line or whether it's the rail and Richmond fight to bring people into the city. But I would say the homelessness issue, I do work at a soup kitchen once a month. I've been doing that for the last year and a half. It's right outside of downtown, and numbers are increasing, they're not decreasing. And when I talk to people who live and work in the area, the first thing they say is, you know, boy, Andy, that's a great idea. We've got the new park going in, but that's just probably more places for those folks to go sleep at night. And we can't have that mindset. We've got to get serious and have an integrated system to deal with homeless population and also have more of a presence of the police downtown, just more uniform visibility, something akin to what they've done up in Fort Worth with the Sundance Square area, if you're familiar with that. I mean, they've really cleaned that area up from folks I've talked to who used to live there before and then what it's been like now over the last, geez, I guess going on 8-9 years. But, you know, it's something that definitely, we're in a state of transition, but I'm definitely very optimistic about it. But those two issues, crime and homelessness, will just sink downtown.
Well, you mentioned earlier briefly that you had a specific plan in mind for the homeless problem. Can you just sort of outline that?
You bet. I call it kind of my HART plan. It's H-A-R-T, and it stands for Homeless Assistance Response Team. And what essentially I'd like to do is utilize or expand the city 311 services to help people report homelessness, panhandlers, what have you, and start in a small quarter of the city, maybe just specifically downtown and maybe the midtown area, and allow people an avenue to basically call and report where there may be issues. From there, we could have whether it's a metro small bus or something like you might see at the airport, like a shuttle bus, if you will, of somebody who's a uniformed officer, doesn't have to be a police officer, but someone who can go out and offer the homeless person or the panhandler basically three options and let them know that, hey, look, these are financial areas, these are areas of commerce, there's really no place for homelessness. So the first option would be, A, can we take you to shelter in this bus? B, if you don't want to go, then you have to move on. Or C, you could cite them. And if you cite too many people, you cite same person so many times, then you've got the law enforcement aspects where you could either, take them to jail for repeat offenders. But until we send a message that, this is not the area to do that, it's costing people's bottom lines. Again, you've seen a lot of clubs and things close, and we're trying to attract a different type of retail down to the city, which, again, we think will help liven things up and boost the economy. So, again, it would be basically expanding the 311 services, start off small, utilize, again, kind of a busing system. We have basically, if you go to the Homeless Coalition, the Houston Homeless Coalition for the Homeless website, you'll see there's 155 different agencies set up to try to help combat homelessness or provide philanthropic services, whether it's food, shelter, what have you. And you've got to believe that those 155 folks aren't talking to each other. So it'd be a part of an integrated system, but I would definitely utilize 311 to allow people to do that so they don't call the police for something that's not an urgent matter, but something that can be handled by a uniformed, trained person. So that's kind of my creative approach.
Now, talk about crime. Do you believe that crime is getting better, which recent statistics seem to indicate, or not?
That's a good question. From the numbers and just analysis I've seen, murder is going up. That's indisputable. Even if you factor in the police statistics where they basically are guesstimating what the population is right now, and they're saying the numbers are going down. But that's, again, predicated upon a certain population figure that it's hard for them to justify. They know for a fact that so many people are in the city of Houston. But I continue to see, just from what I see out there, things aren't really getting better. They're just trying to say things are getting better per capita, per person. But we still have violent crime numbers, just actual large numbers, increasing. I mean, just using HP's own stats here. In 2006, there were 24,249 total violent crimes, which includes murder, rape, robbery, and aggravated assault. And that was up, of course, 1% from 2005, which is 23,989. And I really just put the blame at the feet of the police chief. And I really don't think he's doing the job he needs to do. I really think he's an albatross around the mayor's neck. And, from folks I've talked to in the DA's office all the way to actual officers, it doesn't seem to be that presence of leadership. And I think we've got some good officers, and I think we've got some good legal folks as well, and I just would like to see somebody championing a different approach, if you will. I think you
would you advocate the Chief Hurt's removal?
I totally would. At least I would give him a chance to explain himself, but I'm not a fan of the man, and I have no qualms issuing that statement. From what I've seen and from what I've heard from folks, I would put my trust in the no, as far as just the culture of HPD, as far as lack of basically, it's just, I'd say lack of lack of leadership coming from that area. So whether it's him, whether he delegates too much, what have you, I just think a new direction would be necessary. And usually that's the only way to accomplish something like that in a city environment, is you've got to, like a baseball coach, right? You can't fire the team, you got to change management. So that's what I advocate.
Okay, fair enough. Last year, after some controversy and the tragic death of an HPD officer, the Houston Police Department made some changes to its longstanding policies regarding illegal immigrants. Do you agree with the new HPD policies, and what, if any, changes would you make to them?
I do agree with the new policy. I think it goes back into leadership. It's sad that it took one of their own to be shot in the back of the head before something was done. And I think they've always had that threat. And again, I just have really no patience for criminal aliens per se. I know if I was in a country illegally, I would try to draw as less attention to myself as possible. If we have folks who are breaking the law and are here illegally as well, I definitely think we need to get tough with that. If ICE or the federal government doesn't want to step in or remove those folks, then we need to have somebody who stands up and points the spotlight back at them and say, look, we're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to make sure these folks are dealt with from an immigration perspective as well. But, you know, ICE is dropping the ball or what have you. I don't see that voice per se. I just really see a lot of, if it's not brought up by you folks in the Chronicle or what have you, then you really don't see a lot of, at-large members. You don't see a lot of the city council folks, again, using that bully pulpit to say, look, here's what the problem is, and let's get this addressed. If this is not our bailiwick, then it's theirs, and this is what they need to be doing. Evidently, they're not doing that. So write your congressman, write your senator, let's get it addressed. But I just have little time for
Mayor White just unveiled a plan to lower benzene concentrations in Houston's air. This involves negotiating with industrial plants that are not necessarily located within Houston's borders and aiming for a standard that is stricter than the state's. What's your opinion of this plan? Do you agree with the other steps that the mayor and the council have taken regarding air quality as well? I'm not speaking specifically of suing two plants if they don't come into compliance and allowing for the ticketing of others.
Right. Good question. I was actually at a fantastic workshop on Wednesday in the East End Chamber of Commerce, where they actually had the city come out and explain the nuisance law and how it affects a lot of the businesses out there, industrial. If you remove the air quality question, I think there's not too many people who would say, yeah, they're for laxing the air quality issues. I think what a lot of those folks, whether it's the Valeros or the Lyondells and the folks that really have a lot to lose here, is the issue is the city wants to basically go and kind of double dip and fine them in municipal court and make them pay a fee if they violate a state law. And so eventually the city is trying to take the state laws and say, those are going to be our laws too, and if you violate it, then that becomes a nuisance, and then we're going to fine you through municipal channels as well. That per se, I think that's kind of an undue burden on the companies to be fined twice by two different entities, and that.
Well, that assumes that the state would ever get around to fining them, of course, which I think is what is motivating Mayor White.
I understand that, and that's the question. When you look at the EPA, OSHA, and now you've got the Texas Air Quality Group,
TCEQ.
That's something where, again, these folks definitely they live with that kind of regulatory presence, and they make mistakes, and like some of the folks told me, they're more happy to pay for them. Just they don't want to have to pay for them twice. And again, you've got basically a handful of folks that are basically kind of the culprits. But let's also agree that they're a major employer. So I would think that'd be more of a state deal. I like I believe it's a voluntary benzene enforcement. That's the way it was approached, and I think that's fantastic. I mean, you know, anyone who's ever seen those red alerts that come by living in Houston, that really is a shock to the system. I mean, when they're telling you to stay indoors, that's something that really gets you. So on the principle of it, again, I don't think the company should be fined twice by a city who's also trying to piggyback off of state laws. But as far as air quality, sure, I think those companies should adhere to tougher standards given the fact their proximity to a major metropolitan area. I think a lot of times those folks would. I think the issue that I gathered was this, again, the double dipping, if you will.
Okay. Historic preservation has been in the news lately, and with Old Sixth Ward, the Heights, you know, some landmarks that are under threat. Mayor just unveiled a plan to grant tax abatements or to certain structures that meet historic standards. There'd be about 40 or 50 of them in the city. What's your opinion of this?
I'm a big fan of historic districts. I'm a history buff by nature, and I love the fact that we do have some historic enclaves here in Houston. And one thing I also think I bring to the table, going back to your question earlier, is that I have lived and worked in different parts of the country, and I remember what it's like to live in Atlanta, and you pass by one Burger King, and you wouldn't even thought it was a Burger King because they had adhered to certain kind of Victorian type of codes, and it's just it's fantastic. It helps, again, keep the resale values high, and just keeps that historic nature, and again, just helps facilitate a nice neighborhood. So I like the plan. I see where there could be issues. Typically, I am all for the property owner. I'm not a big fan of government coming and telling them what the property owners can do, but I think people need to realize, too, that there's a lot to lose in certain historic districts if we don't adhere to some semblance of a policy. To put three townhomes on one lot that's traditionally been a one-home lot, which I think is, and it's basically, you know, and make that house not in the same kind of proportion or specs to others in the neighborhood, I think just, again, I don't think it helps anybody out. So I like the proposal the way it's written. I also liked your suggestion about, you know, if there are any folks who had purchased a house or property under the premise that they would have something, you know, to put on there in 90 days, I say we go in and see. So we allow people who may be kind of left out to dry in that 90-day period. But aside from that, I'd rather lean more on the side of historical preservation.
Okay. Last year, City Council extended the city's smoking ban to include bars, but still have some exemptions in place, like for outdoor patios. Would you have supported this ordinance, and do you believe it should be extended further to eliminate the remaining exceptions or not?
I personally wouldn't have voted for the smoking ban. I think there's just too many other issues we need to deal with versus just debating whether someone could smoke a cigarette at a bar or not. I definitely see people's opinion of that in a safe work environment issue is definitely, that resonates with me as well. However, I believe in free choice. People can go work in different areas. You know, from the restaurant managers, owners, and stuff I talk to, a lot of them here in the downtown area, they're still confused by the law. I think it's pretty much stabilized now. I think it's pretty much good the way it is. I wouldn't really push for an increase of the ban or expanding it at all. I think if companies want to differentiate themselves from other businesses, they'll go start a smoke-free place. I don't smoke, but I don't see why we should again beat up the smokers for something that, again, it's not against the law for them to do.
Okay. Another thing that was just in the news was a pay-or-play proposal by the mayor to extend health insurance to employees of firms that do contract work for the city. It would require contractors to either provide health benefits or to pay a fee that would help defray the cost of taking care of sick people that don't have insurance. What's your opinion of this?
I think that's a very nice job of creativity on the mayor's part. I think he, again, goes back, I think he has a good heart when it comes to issues along these lines, and he's trying to generate funds for a good cause, and he's not asking the normal taxpayer to take the burden on. So the way I understand it, though, I mean, it's basically anybody, if there's a contract that does not offer health benefits at all, then there would be a $1 per man hour charge. And on that, I think that's fine. I think that's a great creative way to generate revenue to help pay off some of these other city incurred bills where people, again, are just walking the tab. I would just add a caveat that I would hope that the mayor would highlight specifically what that's going to be used for. I'm a big proponent of seniors, and I think with the aging of America, if we had to prioritize where that money is going to be spent or whose bills get paid first, I would hope we could outline that or just be more specific. versus just saying we're going to take this money and we're going to pay for people who don't have insurance. Because again, I think you get into...
I don't think they were going to pay it to individuals. I think it was going to go to a fund to help cover costs.
Oh, right, a fund. I would just hope that fund gets broken down as to who's receiving it. I think if you're going to say, I'm going to charge you X amount, and that money's just going to go, and some of it could go to pay for people who are legal aliens or using the healthcare system versus paying for a senior, I'd rather have some kind of prioritization list or something a little more minute detail. But I love the concept, though.
And there's also a proposed joint effort with Harris County to provide an insurance option for people who earn less than $50,000 a year. What do you think about that?
Right. Was that the triple pay deal?
Yeah.
Or, I think that's a creative mode. I mean, you'd have to have the state buy into it, to my understanding, as well. Is that correct?
Actually, off the top of my head, I don't recall.
Yeah, I think that was...
There was the person, there was the government, and it may have been the city, and it may have been the state. I don't recall. I'd have to go back and look at it again.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. But I think that's a creative solution. I think that's definitely worth discussing. I'm all for making sure that if you've got, if the state has revenues that they could use it to, a surplus or what have you, that they can utilize to help make it easier for the working person to pay for health care. I don't believe in universal coverage per se, but I believe that if you can be creative and help offset some costs, I think we should do that. And if you add in a lot of the programs we have here, there's a constant theme. If you look at red light cameras, if you look at the increased cost basically for just doing business these days, there's a lot of burden on the taxpayers out there. And I think that anything you do to help defray some of the healthcare costs would be fantastic. So I would favor looking into something like that very strongly.
All right. In his State of the City address, Mayor White called for Houston to cut per capita residential power consumption by 5% in 5 years, and to cut Houston's consumption of motor fuels by 5%, regardless of total miles traveled, and to establish and fund a 5-year plan to sharply reduce the amount of solid waste that we send to waste disposal sites. What's your opinion of this, and what specific steps would you like to see the city take to meet those goals?
Those are all fantastic suggestions. I hope he has a good task force or has some visibility to go out and really give people specific examples of how they can do that. I would hope he would actually, take on the Culbertsons of the world and people holding up the rail line, because I think that's how you get to a lot of the point as far as energy consumption, especially weaning folks off of gasolines and the toxins that they provide and what have you in this area. I'm a proponent of all those. I would definitely just make sure there's some visibility and some how-tos. And then again, you've got to pick your fights. I think this the rail line, it can be so much more, and it seems to be kind of dragging. And I really would hope.
What would you like to see done for that? I assume you're talking about the university's line here.
University line, exactly. I think you just have to call a spade a spade. I don't see how you can allow one person to really hold the purse when you have federal money involved to basically hold the purse strings and hold this whole city hostage over a rail line that basically, again, I think that's going to better the population as a whole. So. I know it hasn't really, Mayor White, at least publicly, hasn't taken on that fight, but I'm a big proponent of the rail. I would just encourage more rail, and I think that would help offset a lot of some of the issues and get people more in that. It's a lifestyle, more or less, what he's advocating, and I think you've got to make sure people have the resources to go ahead and start to kind of live that lifestyle.
Okay. The city of Houston has had term limits for municipal offices since the early 1990s. Some people have suggested changing it to 2 4-year terms for the offices, council, mayor, and controller. And others have suggested scrapping it altogether. What do you think?
No, I saw that this morning. I'm a big proponent of term limits. I think the more people that get involved, the better. And I think that I think people have been spoiled lazy by the fact that they've had other folks who have been in leadership positions for so long, and the way the system's set up, I can tell you firsthand from diving into this race, it does not favor new people getting into the system. So I think we need to have term limits. I think we need people, specifically some of these city councilmen and senators, what have you, who have been in these positions before they're about to jettison, is to start going out and start showing some stewardship. I really don't see a lot of stuff from my experience when talking to other young professionals, what have you, who may have some political aspirations. I don't see a lot of the stewardship, people reaching out, trying to bring some of these new people up to speed on how the systems work, and get them excited about a possible life representing there.
So you would advocate keeping it the same as a 3-2-year term?
I like the 3-2-year terms.
Okay. What would you like to add that I haven't asked you about?
You know, specifically, I just, if you go to my website, a lot of my campaign information, it talks about my ACE plan, and it's basically ACE stands for Accountability, Commerce, and Enforcement of the Law. And that's pretty much not so much a plan as it is just a thought process or kind of a litmus test. And I would just offer that any initiative, any question for our new projects, I'd always kind of take that approach is one, how can I basically set a course here where I would show some transparency and be accountable and take ownership of this and fight the good fight and, you know, be willing to follow my sword if it didn't work out. And then, you know, see, make sure that whatever we're doing is going to be good for business in the long run. And then E, make sure we're enforcing laws at every step of the way. So, again, just wanted to highlight that and just say I'm excited to be part of the race. And
you have officially filed.
Yeah, officially filed. So we'll be on the ballot and everything else. But I really appreciate the forum and, look forward to meeting more folks out there.
Andy Neal, thank you very much. Good luck with your race.
Thank you, Coach.